if it were me, if I found myself in this position, I would just do a hard reset. I'm probably looking at those accounts that are profitable and not profitable. I'm probably getting rid of those accounts that are not profitable, or I'm going back to customers and reworking new deals. I'm changing the entire structure of our business.
Matt Rash, One Shield Security, thank you for coming today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having us.
Charmaine, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Chris.
And your position, Charmaine?
I am account manager for One Shield Security.
You've been working for Matt for a while?
Yeah, for 2 years now. Yeah, exactly 2 years.
I met you one time.
Yes, we met down in San Diego.
And Matt, I've known you for how long? You're going to scare me because of time right now.
Yeah, probably about...
It's been a while.
6 years now.
Yeah, it's been 6 years. Matt, let's get into you a little bit. I appreciate you again coming down to Seal Beach, the drive, spending some time with us today. My goal with Security Advisory Council is to share with other operators. I've always been impressed with you from day one when we met in San Diego. It's actually Carlsbad at a meeting. And you've come up with a lot of really innovative ideas. I love some of the software programs you put together to manage your business better. But if you don't mind, tell me how you kind of get started. Tell me a little bit about you. In fact, let's just go back a little bit further. I'm not going to be a therapist and go back to your childhood. But if you can, tell me where you came from, your parents, a little bit of background, and how you got involved in the security industry. I think everybody would be really interested.
I grew up in Oceanside. Mm-hmm. I'm the youngest of four. I have a twin brother. My dad was in the Navy. My mom was a waitress. She worked late. And athletic family. And sports was a big part of our childhood. Yeah, I went to El Camino High School, graduated from there. But after high school, I had plans of going into law enforcement. And I went to our local community college, went through the police academy, and then found myself employed with an agency here in San Diego. And I was with them for about 2 to 3 years. After my second son was born, Micah, I got out, found myself working in the private sector for private security. I'd never been a security guard before that, but the fit and the opportunity was probably an ideal situation for me at the time, and that's how I started. I remember I was coaching in a wrestling tournament in Vegas, the Freak Show, when I'd gotten the call from Brad, and Brad had offered me an opportunity to come into his office and schedule an interview. And I remember our interview was pretty unique. We're playing ping pong, talking about security and what visions he had for his company and what role I would play. And so at the time, he had just acquired a small business. He was an entrepreneur. He was working with Black & Decker, did some consulting for Chamberlain, Jenny Craig. And he was looking to start a security firm. He was going through a divorce, was traveling a lot, wanted to stay at home. And so he came across this business and realized that there was problems within the industry that he felt he could solve. And so I'd worked with Brad as his operations manager in a small startup, and we held multiple hats. So I went from managing people out in the field to hiring guards to doing sales and dealing with insurance. I basically had a 2-3 year period where I was able to learn the industry from someone who has a ton of business experience and who is passionate, quite frankly, who's passionate about providing security and helping people and businesses. And I admired that from him because I used that when I was communicating to guards on the field. You have an individual who believes that most owners of a security firm were like former military, former law enforcement, and that experience is needed, but lacked the business expertise. And that was what he felt that he provided to his business. And as I started working with him, I had met Charmaine. Charmaine was our number two in the office, and she had supported me as I managed Brad's business. And so over a period of time, I had an opportunity to learn about the security industry, and I had to learn more about some of the issues that guards had out in the field, clients had managing guards and managing properties. And I got to a period of time, I found myself like really enjoying the space that I was working in. We had took that business from like 300,000 to like almost 2.5 million over the first 2 years. And that was really exciting. And it was cool because I was a big part of that. And so a big part of what we did was a big part of our culture at the time were things that I was bringing to the team, right? Getting them to change their thought process and their approach to providing security and what it looked like. And so over a period of time, I think we had a little bit of burnout, Brad, we had a little bit of friction, and so it led me to starting my own security firm. And so in 2018, we started a company called OneShield Security Services. We never envisioned getting into events, but we stumbled across a relationship with a company called StaffPro. StaffPro was at the time owned by U.S. Security Associates and then later acquired by Allied Universal Event Services. As a new company, it was perfect for us because we were able to help support in these major events that happen in Southern California. So like the Academy Awards, the Grand Prix, the Comic-Cons, the Rose Parade. In fact, I remember our first event was Comic-Con. Our second event, we did some other events, but the next event was the Rams training camp. And then from there, it became like an every week thing. And so that allowed me to connect with a lot of people in order to really allowed me to get jobs right away and then allowed me enough time to develop relationships to gain new customers. When I separated from Ironwall, which is the company I'd worked with, I didn't go back and try to solicit any of their customers. I didn't go back and try to solicit any of their employees. Now, I had great relationships with property managers, and I shared a lot of ideas that I had and listened to some of the concerns that they had within the industry and how we can change it. But at the time, it was more of a, what's the identity change, right? At the time, it was Brad's reputation was image and quality. So you get better service when you pay a guard more money. And then he was all about branding, which are two things that clients care about. But I used to tell people, when you pay more money for a crappy guard, you just get a crappy guard that makes more money. Like it's not the first thing that comes to providing value. And I came across a book, and that book was called The Go-Giver. And then The Go-Giver is based on the business concept of giving. And I think that book shaped everything that I wanted to include in our business. And that was basically the book that was based on the concept of giving back to your customers and with real value. And those are things that I try to implement within our business. And we tell customers we provide more value, right? We put our clients' interests first. We're authentic. And part of being authentic is the most valuable gift you have to offer anyone is yourself. Everybody has the same access, same software. Everybody has the same access to the same guard pool. But ultimately, I think customers really want to work with people who are genuine, people that they can trust, that they like, and that they know is going to work hard. And ultimately, I think that's the reason why we've grown as well as we have. And then just the influence we have over people and our guards, like really respecting our guards, guiding them on what clients want, what they're looking for, setting them up for success. I tell our supervisors, we're not always trying to catch people doing the wrong things. We want our supervisors to catch our guards doing things that are right, acknowledging them, and then providing a redirection on minor infractions.
So let me ask you something. Sounds like you had a pretty good background to start, right, working with Brad. How long was he in the business?
He wasn't. He was learning the business just as much as I was learning
the
business.
Oh, okay. So he was an entrepreneur prior to?
Yeah. The interesting thing is he knew business. Okay. He knew he had good structure, he had good processes, he was very smart. He went out and hired people with industry experience, industry knowledge to help add credibility to his business.
Okay.
But at the time, I was young, I was motivated, I had a family, right? And so as I found myself working within this industry, you start surrounding yourself with people that you get along well with. And ultimately, it just became, hey, we're solving problems, right? So then you solve problems. And then you start to identify some of those reoccurring problems, and then you try to figure out how can we be proactive and prevent these problems from going through.
Yeah. But as the industry, especially small to mid-level, and my purpose for this too is that take somebody that's just getting started in the industry, is not experienced in business, but interested. Maybe he's a former guard operations guy that he's got a few contracts. That's how it starts, right? I'm working with one company. He's a supervisor, develop some relationships with clients, right? And they say, hey, you should open your own company. And what's he do? He reaches out, he's in business.
Right.
So for people like that, because that's quite a few, what would you offer them? What suggestion would you tell them? Because you talk about quality, you talk about, right?
Yeah, there was a time where I was just happy to have a job. I thought the consistency and the stability was the best thing for our family at the time. Sometimes having those fallouts are good. If I never had a fallout with Brad, and it wasn't a bad fallout, but if I was not pushed to start the security firm, I would have never known the success that we're having right now. But ultimately, I describe it as two things. Like you have an individual that starts a business, you're going to be working a lot of hours for very low pay, if at no pay at all. And so it's really hard to stay motivated when there's nothing there to really work for. We had no jobs when we started. And I think that the differentiator is you got to show up every single day and as if you were servicing customers. And until you find that customer, you've got to knock on doors and you've got to find your first customer. Once you get your first customer, everything else is easy after that.
So who should be your first customer? I know my first customer. I was out of a garage, right, yeah, with about $40,000 with retirement money. And I thought I had it. Oh, this is going to be great. I was in the uniform. I was the sales guy. I was the operations guy. And then I had to find the people, and they don't come easy. Right. So had experience in law enforcement, but I was looking for the easiest contract to get business so I could collect a paycheck. And you're right, it's 24/7. So for those that are listening, what would you recommend somebody started? What would be the best client? We know,
yeah,
great contracts. We know where people start with, but what did you start with and why?
So it's unique. We're servicing an industry where people need security, right? Anyone that has a guard today that needs security is a potential lead. But honestly, it wasn't about finding contracts as it was finding people that I could support that needed security. And I remember at the time, like, I was willing to do whatever for whoever. But it's not about winning the contract as it is about providing exceptional service. And like, how should I say it? There's two types of people. There's salesmen, and then there's not, and people who are not salesmen. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the way that I was able to get our first contract was really just providing follow through, being there, being available, and then just letting people know that we exist and what we're about.
So it was trust.
It was trust. Yeah, I think my approach wasn't about winning contracts as it was about being genuine and providing a service for people who need it. And ultimately, I think over time, providing exceptional service and being genuine and having good follow through and doing the thing and delivering on the promises that you tell people, ultimately that led to word of mouth, and we grew most of our business through referrals. But I did target property management companies. They're in an industry that needs security, and in the area that I went, I typed in property management companies in Carlsbad, in Oceanside, in Vista, in San Marcos, and I went and I knocked on the door to every single person. And then you go to the receptionist desk, there will be business cards, you send them an email, you follow up with them, and then you just ask them for opportunities to provide bids on things that go out. Most property managers need 2 to 3 bids. That gives you an opportunity to be awarded a contract. Most HOAs ask to meet their new vendors, and so from there, you've already got a foot in the door. You've got a potential customer, and you're one of 3 people that they're looking at.
So you did all the sales. You didn't go out and try to hire anybody. That's a difficult market to try to hire a salesperson. So what if somebody doesn't have that skill set, doesn't like to do cold calls? These are things to really think about, especially if you're starting this on your own. You don't have a lot of capital, and you just start with a couple of contracts because they don't pay on time. You're 30, 60, 90 days, 120 before you can get a paycheck.
You're fronting cash, starting new jobs. There's a lot more that went into it. All the paperwork behind starting a new business, getting the insurance to start the new business, developing the website to start a new business, going through the licensing, developing new patches, finding your uniform vendor. Doing what I did very early on is, if I were to hire someone, what would my hiring process look like? So I streamlined a lot of it through DocuSign. But I had a little bit of a head start because I'd already done it for somebody else for 2 or 3 years. So I replicated everything that I learned, and I used the stuff that I liked, and then I got rid of the stuff that I didn't like. And so I had a little bit of a head start, but I didn't have a head start from the fact that I started this business and I already had a contract or I already had a lead. I started the business because I had to start the business because I was looking for better opportunities for a family. And it wasn't, those opportunities were never going to come with me working for somebody else. The idea is what I did for him, I could do for myself, and I could be in control. And that was the big motivation. But every day I remember I separated from him June 15th, and June 22nd, my permits came. I was approved for my licensing. And then July 1, I was like my first true day. in July 1, I was knocking on doors. I had flyers made. I was basically ready to go.
You're pretty progressive in your thinking. You always have been. You're not the average Joe starting a business, that's for sure. And I've always been impressed with your ability to find the right people. But you had some connections too, right? Like Charmaine. You said you worked with her.
Yeah. So the relationship with Charmaine, I remember Charmaine was in office, but she was also managing a HOA in San Diego for Brad. And so I was just hired as the operations manager. And Brad and Charmaine, probably at the time, had more experience than I did. And I was hired as a co-operating manager with another individual. And you know what stuck out is we had two totally different styles. Okay. I think my counterpart, John, was probably a little more seasoned, a little more seasoned, and a little more on top of it than I was at the time. I just had a lot of care, I saw things a little different. He wanted to write people up. That was his big thing. He's maintain order by writing people up and getting rid of them. I tried to spend more time looking into what the issues were when it came to resolving them. But I remember the first time I met Charmaine, I went to her job site and I just asked her, hey, I'm new here. Just tell me everything I need to know about the property as if I was a new guard that you're training. And that gave me an opportunity to listen to Charmaine and really understand what the client's needs were. And then after reaching out to her, I scheduled a few days to go out and work the job site with her. And so I had an opportunity to really learn how to manage that job site because I was able to see it from the guard's perspective. And I think a lot of managers are hesitant about being on site. They probably feel embarrassed. They probably feel like it's too low for them, whatever. I had a good understanding that I wasn't responsible for the job at the time. I was responsible for the people who were responsible for the job. And because of Charmaine's experience, she really allowed me to have a good understanding of what that client wanted. And I think I went into it, hey, how can I help support you? And I think that was a pivotal moment because I was able to, because my mindset was supporting her and allowing her to better perform her job, I think I was able to learn in that process as well. And I was able to learn what guards really needed from their managers.
And Charmaine, how long have you been into business now?
Total 16 years.
16 years. Okay.
Yeah. When I met Matt, when Ironwall started, they bought the security company that I was currently with, which was Absolute Protection Services.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how it all came about. And I opted, at the time, to work as a guard in the field. And I was actually an office manager for Absolute. But I appreciate the experience that I got managing that account, HOA, because it did teach me the guard's side of things. And I learned how to become a security guard at that point. And I think we both, Matt and I, both learned how to be security guards working that location. It was very tedious. The clients were very tedious. They wanted things done the way that they wanted them done. And no other way. There was no in between. So I learned how to be a security guard officer at that location. A couple of months later, I ended up coming into the office. I think I came in as a, do you remember?
Yeah, it was like an administrative assistant.
Yeah.
And so.
For you.
Yeah, for me. And so I remember at the time, and I think this is why it was important. We started to grow the business with new accounts, and we needed help in the office for a lot of the reoccurring tasks that needed to get done, from time and attendance and processing payroll and invoices and things like that. And so we, as every young company, we were going through changes as well. And I think I told Brad, hey, you got to bring Charmaine back in the office. She was with the previous management team. She has a great relationship with a lot of our customers today. She's respected by a lot of the guards. And quite frankly, she's going to tell you how it is. But at the time, he was kind of like, oh, really? And I said, yeah, dude, you've got a gem out here working out in the field. And she can provide a lot more value to you by bringing her back in office. And our relationship has been strong ever since. And I think it's just having people that have good follow through and people that kind of understand what we're trying to accomplish, I think is important. But trust goes a long way. I've got to be able to trust the people that we're working with, and they have to care about providing a good service. And so sometimes that means going above and beyond and doing work, even though you're not getting paid for it. I remember I was probably managing that business. I was not the highest paid person in the business at the time. I think I cared more about the opportunity to learn about the business and to grow it and communicating with people. My day-to-day was very different. I had satisfaction with knowing that we were resolving problems. And Charmaine, she was managing an account that was our toughest account to manage at the time. It was a large community. We're probably, $2-3 million homes. We're providing gate access. And she's working with a property manager who is having to, who's being managed by sometimes an unrealistic board. And they expect quality service. And they're expecting quality service by people who don't get paid a lot of money. And we were able to service it and resolve a lot of their issues. And that was a big indicator that Charmaine could, you know, if she can resolve this property, then we can resolve another property. And so bringing her back in with all the experience she had at the time was super helpful for us. And it was less risky for us at the time, too, hiring people that are outside of your business that don't always tend to work out. Sometimes those people let you down more.
Yeah, 100%. Always takes a few before you find the eagle on the cliff, is what I call it, for sure.
The biggest thing, I believe, is hiring the right person for the job. You can't just hire anybody and just put them in a uniform and say, go do security.
Yeah, so, and a lot of the companies, there's no doubt they don't. There's no protocols. It's just putting them in a windbreaker and sending them out there. There's no training. That's typical. Yeah. That really is. But with the start you guys had and with your background, starting with HOAs, you're going to fall down real quick because if you don't provide the service, they're already on you. Yeah. The board's on the property manager company's on you, You won't have that contract very long if you don't provide the service. Now, you started with HOAs, and did you climb from there with more standing patrol? Where did you, what was your vision to get further down the road?
Yeah. So we started with HOAs, but then we slowly started getting to commercial, a lot more industrial buildings. And at the time, a big part of that was we were willing to go towards electronic reporting, and the people we were hiring were very hands-on, right? At the time, we weren't managing 20, 30, 50 accounts. We were managing the 4 or 5 accounts. So our responsiveness to those customers, we were really hands-on.
Sure.
We didn't really have many problems to begin with. And because we did events, we had stable jobs coming in from a professional event management company. And so we had people. In fact, we made it competitive to get a full-time standing guard position because we had an opportunity to evaluate guards and employees through events. And if they weren't reliable people for staffing events, they weren't going to be reliable people for staffing standing guard sites.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. In addition to provide additional income with the events, when people are behind in pay, that's a nice way to generate some revenue too, build your reputation and then pull from that gene pool for your guards too, your security teams.
That's exactly what we did.
And then you did this for how long? You did commercial and then where else did you go?
It's interesting. We started our business in 2018. Okay. So we did events for about 2 years. While we were doing events, we had standing guard sites. We didn't have very many, but we had enough. But in 2020, we had COVID. COVID happened. And so it's basically shut down overnight, almost 50% of our business. But it was a perfect time for us because we had an opportunity to slow down from the chaos of events. And we really had an opportunity to focus on the vertical that we wanted to focus on, which is more standing guard, HOAs, and commercial. And I remember right away our portfolio, you know, we didn't have the Fortune 500 customers that ramped up. We had, you know, a lot of small mom and pop or mid-level businesses that were concerned and were cutting back because they didn't know how long COVID was going to affect their business for. It wasn't until halfway through COVID when we started to ramp up. But I think we did a really good job preparing for it.
So COVID cut you out completely?
Not completely.
When you say 50%, they said, I don't want to guard on the property or tell the guard to come to work, but don't talk to anybody. What'd that look like?
Yeah, so I'll explain it. Most of our events and large crowds were basically put on pause.
Okay.
And so I remember we didn't know. We had just gotten into a new office. We had staff, right? At the time, we were managing our budget based on events which were not as regular, like it was kind of variable. I remember what we did. We went out. We bought 3 vehicles. Some of them salvage. We cleaned them up. We got them outfitted, and then we ended up closing a deal with Soapy Joe's, okay, like a car wash company. And so they're shutting down their facilities, and they needed someone to go and do asset management, and we provided overnight patrols. And so as the event slowed down, there were customers who needed security because they were concerned with looting and everything else. And so we had an opportunity to pivot a lot of those employees that were part-time, and we were able to offer full-time positions to those people who needed the work. Because a lot of companies laid off employees during that time. They weren't able to continue their business. We started providing services to those customers that needed it during the shutdown. And then over time, as companies needed security, we were a company that was available, that had really good follow through, and that was able to quickly respond. And a lot of those customers that we have gotten during COVID, we still have today. And COVID, I think we've probably, 3-4x'd our business. And a lot of it was just because we had an opportunity to just focus on our customers and focus on growing through them and reaching out to people who also needed services. So it was fun for us at the time, but it was also chaotic because we're testing our processes on whether or not we can handle a large amount of growth at once. And at the time, we had a really good team. And we had a good team that was willing to do whatever it takes. And we had a really good organization.
So did you grow with an operational money, or did you have to take some investments to get the team that you needed, put some money into the business to bring the team in first and then go from there? How'd you do it?
No, so a small office doesn't take a lot of people. I always tell people, like, starting this business was $2,000 on our credit card, and look where we're at today. We're doing $10 million in revenue. And
you're doing $10
million? Yeah.
That's great.
If I can do it, I think a lot of other people can probably.
And what time frame?
From 2018 to 2024.
That's pretty darn good.
But at the time, we had one single operations manager, and we had an admin person who helped us with administrative, reoccurring stuff, and then there was me. And so you split and divide the duties. You have supervisors that help you out and manage. But I think communicating with the team and letting them know that opportunities were going to come up, I think helped.
Okay. This is an industry. This industry can be a nightmare. So what is the recipe for keeping that business, right? Because same gene pool. Culture, training, okay, you had your managers, but that's really getting your managers, would you say, more out in the field, communicating with your teams, communicating with your clients on a regular basis, having your weekly sync meetings within your operations to make sure things are running smoothly. How did you retain, was it sales that grew your business, or was it a combination of retaining existing clients instead of most companies win 3 contracts, lose 1, win 4, lose 2? You're bouncing around. That's the truth. That's what a lot of them do. What was it?
Retaining. You have to retain. Of course, you want new clients, but you have to retain your current ones.
So was this referral business, would you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
So in the retention side, and tell me what you did to retain outside of a weekly phone call. What was your conversation like for your clients to say, hey, you guys make me feel comfortable because the industry is the industry and guards are going to do what they're going to do. So were you just, in fact, you were one phone call, I call it? What kept you there?
Yeah, just being completely available all times of the day or night and showing your face at least once every couple of weeks. I moved to Texas briefly and did my job from Texas. And when I was doing it remotely from Texas, I was actually contacting the clients weekly. I was calling them, talking to them, asking them, hey, is there anything I can do? Anything you want changed? Any problems, just checking in with them. And that's not just an email. It's a phone call.
Okay. Were they picking up?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, everybody say, oh, I can do that. But the phone call is for when you made the phone calls, how did you keep track of your clients to show, in other words, how did you, I'm going to put this phrase better. There's calling your clients. Like back in the day, I did call my clients. Not just calling your clients and leaving a message, but actually when they picked up the phone, what was your talk track? What did you say?
Hey, how's your day? How's everything going? First and foremost, just checking in with you, doing a weekly check-in with you to see how things are going. If any problems arise over the last couple of weeks, is there anything that I can do or change? Are the guards performing well? All of that. And when they didn't answer, I would leave a voice message. And when they didn't respond to the voice message or call me back, I would send an email.
Okay.
And I would just go down the list. Because currently right now, I'm not, even then, I think I was managing probably about 10 or 11 clients.
Okay.
But some of them with multiple locations.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I think when it comes to client retention, this industry is built on trust and relationships. And when clients know that you're looking out for their best interests, they're going to be loyal to you. And at the time, we had really strong relationships with our customers. And so our retention was really good. I don't think we had gotten canceled from a client until we were like year four. And it's even still to this day, it doesn't happen very often. Most of our jobs end because of job completion. Now, does that mean we make mistakes? I mean, that we're perfect? No, we still make mistakes. But it's our response to the mistakes is what I think, you know, really helps strengthen the relationship with your vendor, because they know that when there's a problem, you're going to be quick to respond to it. And quite frankly, a lot of guard frustration or a lot of client frustrations is there's an issue and then guard companies are not quick to respond to it. And then they start looking for a new vendor. And so we've been able to capitalize on new relationships because there are vendors that just, they don't follow through or they don't respond in a way that's beneficial back to the customer when the problems arise. And so I think we do a pretty good job of just being open, transparent. Like our clients know we're going to have problems in the industry, but it's how we resolve those problems.
We've said all the time, same gene pool, but it's being honest with them. But worst case, I think what a lot of companies do is they start to grow. And then they put an operations guy in that doesn't have the training, doesn't have the skill set. They haven't taken time to show them, in other words, exactly how you guys operate, right? They throw them in that position. The owner doesn't want to make the phone call. He's not active in his business, or he feels like he's now deserved the right to step out for a week at a time and touch base, right? So he loses touch, leaves that responsibility with the supervisor who doesn't know what to say. Right. And he thinks sending an email means checking on the client. There's a lot of things that go downhill from there. And it just blows my mind because I've told these guys before, you have to be proactive, meaning if you're going to make phone calls, stay in touch, make it a routine and schedule with the client. Tell them, hey, listen, I do need to contact you. It's part of our deal. Okay. I don't want to drive you crazy. How would you like to be contacted? Telephone, email, what's a better day? When can I spend the 5 minutes? Because I have to sit with my team on a quarterly basis or weekly, however you did it with Matt at the time, and I have to give them a solid answer. I just can't. So what does that look like? And if you can open that up with the client from the start, it's going to get you paid on time. It's going to solve a lot of issues, right, knowing where you stand with your clients. And you guys have obviously done that very well.
And even if you don't talk to them, I mean, they at least want to see you on site, speaking with your guards and doing training and just checking in. They just want to see you. You don't necessarily have to have multiple conversations with them monthly, but if they just see you a few times a month on site, that usually makes them happy as well.
Yeah, you can do that during the day with your HOAs, right? Because you've got a 24-hour account, it's at the guard check, you got the board, you got a lot of people looking at you, no question. But for somebody doing patrol at night or checking on somebody at night, how the best way to do that is what, through email. The written report?
Yeah. And then also just emails.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of times their offices are usually active during the day. It's just that the work gets done at night. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a very important job for what you've done. Obviously, you did a great job, Charmaine.
Thank you.
Personalities reflect that. That's why Matt brought you over. He saw that personally.
Thank you.
And he's a good manager, too.
He's
a caring one at that.
Yes.
And being an owner doesn't mean you have a strong thumbprint on top of everybody and yelling and screaming. It's not military. It's building the culture. I think people have abused it. They've abused. I don't think a lot of people, and again, I say this all the time, understand what culture is. So top to bottom, I think when I've been in your office, when I talk to Matt, I feel like when I talk to an operation manager, it reflects that. When I talk to a guard, I've had the kind of like the same response. So everybody's following lead and excited to be there, and that's hard to do.
Yeah, most of the team respects him, and that's a great thing because a lot of times you all have owner of a company that is not engaged and not – you can't even have a conversation with him. You never see him. It's totally different with him. You can see him anytime. Guards can come in and talk to him anytime they want. He'll take time out.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. That makes the difference, actually.
Yeah. Matt, if you don't mind, real quick, I know we're on time, but just talk a little bit about technology because, as you guys know, that's my forte or where I spend a lot of time, not just in the security industry, but developing SoberTrack. And then, of course, we got acquired and then we have another product now out there. It's called Vision Insights. It's an AI-based tool. Didn't think it was going to go that direction, but tell me about just be honest, your thoughts with technology, from where it came from and how valuable you think it is. But at the end of the day, give me your thoughts on that. It's not, let me put it this way, it's not just software, it's how you use it, right? So I'd love to have your perspective on that, Matt.
I look at how far we've came in such a short amount of time. I remember in 2015, we were writing reports on a Word PDF. Right. they'd get saved to a drive. I'd review it with the guard. We'd save it as a PDF and send it out to the client by email. And during that time, there's options available, officer reports, silver track tick, and the guards that were really just making things more efficient and easier. So when I had the opportunity to add electronic reporting to our business, really, for me at the time, I was open to adding new technology, but I needed the technology that we're going to add. It had to make what we did easier and more efficient. And the challenge for me is, and I think a challenge for a lot of guard companies, is that reporting tool or any reporting tool that you have is going to provide, it's going to hold you accountable. It's going to hold your team accountable. Unless you're confident that your guards are going to do things the right way all the time, then it may point out flaws within your system. It may point out flaws within your tour patrols. And if you're not ready to adjust to it, or if you're not ready to identify that could be a pain point for you, I think a lot of companies were hesitant to onboarding a guard management software because I think they knew that they were having trouble managing their guards to begin with, and that they were trying to hide that and not share that with their customers. But at the end of the day, it's all about providing what's in the best interest of our clients. And the clients are asking, hey, how do you manage your team? How do you ensure that they're checking the spots that they're supposed to check? And so when we had the opportunity to add that technology, it made it easier, but it also allowed us to identify who was actually doing the patrols and who was not. And so I think the biggest challenge for us when it came to reporting is getting officer buy-in and getting them to buy in on what we're actually trying to accomplish. And I think for with the systems that we have now, I think managers could believe that these systems are helpful when it comes to ensuring that your guards are regularly checking the areas that they're supposed to check. But are they really still, are they checking those areas? Then are they also being security minded? Before, I think our hesitation is checking the QR codes. Like, we're checking people to check these areas, not just go walk around and scan QR codes. And so you're having to teach the guards why it's important to conduct those tour patrols. And why conducting those tour patrols provides peace of mind to the customer, knowing that they're getting the value that they're paying for. And so the softwares we use now, I think it does a really good job of kind of teaching the guards on why it is, like, the purpose behind the patrol. And then even with vision, the dynamic observations where you're using AI to analyze the content that's being submitted and to rewrite it to where it's easy to understand for the customer. Because I think the friction point for us at the time, it went from we're doing things through a Word document and it's having to get reviewed by a manager and then it's having to be sent out to the client. And that process was not very efficient. And that electronic DAR was great because it took away that middle person, right? You do it from their phones, they have to do it from the computer. They don't need Wi-Fi to connect to a drive. But the issues we're having with reports is you have guards that don't all write reports the same way. So there's no consistency. Some guards do their tour patrols, other guards don't do their tour patrols. And then SilverTrack came about. And then SilverTrack made it possible for us to basically create guard checkpoints and to clearly identify the different levels of issues. And that helped. And now we're using Vision, a new software, and that software is able to we're able to explain the purpose behind each tour patrol. We're able to show them what the expectations are through each tour patrol. So if they have questions, they can go back and look at the instructions. But then also with AI, they're able to take the content and they're able to rewrite the report as if it was professionally written by someone who's got years of experience of writing reports. So I think it's made it easier for us. It's made it easier for our customers. But it's also, at the end of the day, I think we're in a system where we're in an industry where we have to provide value. And a lot of the things that occur are based off of a risk assessment of what's the risk and the impact and probability. And clients need us for the 5% of the time when bad things happen, right? The other 95% of the time, you're doing preventative maintenance. You're basically doing things that are going to help reduce and prevent incidents. And so I think Vision kind of does that for us. It helps. It makes it easier for us to explain what the tour routes are for the guards. The guards have an opportunity to learn from the system. And then if they are someone who struggles writing reports, the system's going to help them. So as I talk it through now, we went through the systems have changed. We basically streamlined the process from when guards write the reports to when we send it out. So we resolved that through officer reports. We also made it easier for guards to write reports from their phone instead of having to connect to Wi-Fi with a computer or to do it from a paper report that has to get scanned in. And then, but the problems there is we were having people who don't know how to write reports. We can't verify that tours are being completed. And so we moved to a system like SilverTrack. We resolved that issue, but then we get complacent, like the same reoccurring stuff. I don't think a lot of guard companies probably didn't build out SilverTrack the way that it was needed, but it was enough for the customers to see that those certain locations were getting checked. And then Vision, I think it just ties everything together. Like you have AI that's doing a lot of the mundane, like analyzing the content, changing it, appropriately recording it to the type of observations that are being received, and then while also making it easier for guards to understand the tour route, then verifying that they were there, but also gives them step-by-step instructions on how to respond to incidents. And I think from 2015 to 2025, there's a lot of changes there, a lot of different softwares.
Changes.
And if you're not a tech guy.
Yeah, especially the login feature. I like that too. We don't have to worry about them forgetting to log in their password. And then it's 4K video, 4K pictures. So you eliminate the problems with having to be compressed. And then the ability to go completely paperless with the digital side. I'm obviously promoting it for obvious reasons, but there's a lot there. And then 80 different languages.
I love it.
Write it in their own native.
I love it. I get a vehicle inspection report from it every single day that shows the car on the map right where it's supposed to be. I know where it is. I don't have to open up anything to view it. I don't have to log in to view it. It's excellent. I know that the guards like it because there's no login. There's nothing to remember. It's just a link that they hit every day and they start it.
Yeah, it makes it pretty quick for them too, yeah, to report quickly with the plus sign. So, yeah, when we thought about coming back at this again, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to be, it had to be better. Number one, eliminate the training issue, be able to have anybody do it. And I'm recapping, obviously, and then multiple languages, no Apple, Android login issues, app issues, and basically completely paperless for the client, analytics to go with it, and to just speed it up, speed reporting up tremendously. So it's going to be, there's a lot of great things coming with it, but that's good.
Yeah, I think the thing that I like the most about it, and I get this, and I have it set up to where I'm a client, so I see what the client receives. I do the dynamic observations, the AI that analyzes the content and the videos. I think that's, nobody else has it. I think the guard checkpoints are helpful in how we're able to communicate what the expectations are to the guards. And then there is an interactive map that kind of shows the customer where our guards are moving throughout the day. And I think that interactive map shows us the self-initiated activity that we're looking for. It's exciting for me. We've had to see it almost in every generation, from paper reports to Word documents to on your cell phone to true guard management, and then to now what it is today. I know our clients love it.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for this competition and everything, but it's going to be very hard because you're talking about 28 years of experience, my database of working with every vertical in that program. So the specific language, like the terminology, the risk and liability terms, that's in there. So the guards, for an example, on a residential, you can't say tenant. It's not security gates. It's a gated community. It's courtesy patrol. That's all built into the dynamic reporting, which that was just something very unique. I won't give the recipe, but we were very surprised to pull that off. So now it's a story. So it's not trespass, burglary, vandalism, tour, inspection, checkpoint. It is telling a story. It's taking what the guard wrote in there. It's enhancing it. It keeps it for court, their original note. The client sees the good note, but it's telling a story. And inside that story, like a Reader's Digest, it gives you the title. So it's really, when you're going through reports now, it's an interesting chapter of stories that you're reading that your guard, your security teams did out in the field.
And best of all, it doesn't need to be approved by anybody. So that takes out the middleman that needs to approve it to be sent out to the actual client.
Very good point, Charmaine. Thank you for adding that. 100%.
Yeah. I think we have a commitment to doing as much as we can to service our customers. And I think reporting is a big part of that.
Yeah. And again, part of this, Matt, what I'm trying to put together for the groups is a security advisory council to go out and teach and educate the clients in the industry, and then help the operators that truly want to do something different, but I don't want to open this up just to everybody. I really want to bring key players in different specific states and cities and teach them better practices within our own little group of people that are getting it done and doing a fine job, right? Just a place to go to, somebody to talk to, somebody to learn from, right? That cares just as much as you, that is like-minded.
Hey, I want to go back to a little bit. We're talking about, we kind of went over a lot about how all the changes in our business has happened. Mm-hmm. Like from being day one with zero clients to experiencing a little bit of success and having a single operations manager, and then how we scaled our business back then, how we scaled our business to be able to manage more and to be able to serve more customers. And, you know, we talked about the challenges of starting our business in 2018, basically from zero, trying to do whatever it takes to get your first customer and to be able to manage them and grow within the business. I think for most security companies, there becomes a pivotal point where, you know, for most security companies that are small to mid-level, they have a single operations manager. They're managing 30, 40 accounts, and they're starting to exceed their bandwidth. And I think the thing that really helped us get to the next level is adding middle layer management. And we had one operations manager. This guy was a rock star, had came to us from G4S, had a tremendous amount of experience, had a strong military background. But over the challenges that we've had and the amount of expectations that he had in that role, I think he exceeded his bandwidth. And what ended up happening is he's managing 40 customers. He only has so much time that he can allocate for each customer and to resolve each problem. And what ended up happening is we had to reevaluate if this process was, although needed at a small startup phase where you have one guy holding multiple hats, we had to reevaluate that the structure of our business at the time was so dependent on one person. It was not organized to be able to scale the business. And so what we did is we added account managers as a middle layer management. So we have one operations manager who, instead of managing 40, 50, 60 different accounts, he's managing 3 or 4 account managers who are then managing the 8 to 12 accounts. And as we scale, a lot of times, if you have a business that doesn't have good practices or good processes, people tend to do what they feel is right. And so you get a lot of inconsistencies. And so for us, we had to scale that back a little bit and really focus on our internal organization. And adding account managers made it where we can keep it possible to keep our finger on the pulse to ensure that our customers are getting the attention that they need and deserve. And the span of control is much better. It's really hard for one person to effectively manage 40, 50, 60 different sites, 40, 50, 60 different post orders, and then let alone another 100 different security officers. So when we added the account managers, it really made it easier. We can really ensure that our customers are receiving the attention that they need, but more importantly, the responsiveness that they need when things come up, whether it's a change in the schedule or if it's a new policy or if there's a complaint that we're tasked with resolving. So I think that's been a big game changer for us. Dedicated account managers who have allowed us to keep our finger on the pulse and ensuring the responsiveness for our customers, and then having the account managers there to support them and to manage their performance through key KPIs.
No, I appreciate you sharing that because that is a big issue. But to say that is one thing. A lot of them say, I'll get an account manager. But it's really what you're doing is you're getting your team motivated because everybody's meeting at one location a week and they're responsible for their 8 accounts.
But as you grow, you have one single operations manager that's taking a lot of work. The team is doing really well. We're getting new accounts. But you can only, you know, you can only scale that to the bandwidth of the person that's running the ship. And so identifying that we're starting to have different problems and leakage because of that, adding the middle layer managers just really just spreads the workload among the rest of the team. We had one operations manager. We had several supervisors, but the supervisors never really had any real authority to make decisions. It all went back to that operations manager. And if he was busy, then you have small problems that get put off that turn into big problems. And then it becomes destructive. And so we talked about 3-4 years in is when we started learning, hey, we're starting to have issues and it's affecting our client retention. We had given a termination notice. And I think that was the moment where I said, hey, what we're doing now isn't going to continue working, especially if we want to look to continue to scale the business or even to manage. We weren't even trying to scale the business. We didn't have active sales at the time. But because of all the amount of referrals that we were getting, it was hard for us to keep up with it was hard for us to keep up with the demand. So we had a hard reset. We hired account managers. We divided our accounts. We allowed them to, we had an opportunity to teach them what our expectations were, how to become good managers. And they were able to take complete ownership of the accounts that they're managing. And because they have complete control, complete ownership of that, nobody wants to do a bad job. So they're developing personable relationships with our clients where our clients know that there's somebody that they can go to and rely on without having to call the owner of the company or call a guy that's just getting just beat up because he's got so many accounts he's managing, he can't keep up. So doing so, that I think that was a big moment. Like, because now we can scale our business. We have people that are actively working together as a team, and people aren't as stressed out.
Yeah, but you have to build trust. Yeah. And we say that, and when you mentioned that you have your account managers, most security companies, smaller ones, won't do it because they're afraid to give up that control. They're afraid that person's going to build the relationship and take their clients from them. And I hear it time and time again. But you guys were smart to build the culture, build the trust with your group. You had a great reputation. They were comfortable. They felt they were part of the business. And I think that's why people leave. They just don't feel like they're part of the business or get abused, right? It's kind of like, I think the bigger security companies, Allied Securitas, they got their operations. They pay them well. But God, they torture the hell out of them. They're so busy. They get discouraged. But you've done a great job with that, Matt. So making them feel part of the company, they got responsibilities, they feel like they're running their own little group, right, as far as the accounts, and it's been referrals, right? Yep. A lot of the growth.
Yeah, a lot of the growth has been referrals and repeat customers.
How do you keep your own operations teams motivated, so to speak?
We do have a base, and we evaluate our team based on their ability to manage, not in number of properties, but the number of hours. Now, we have one manager that manages our dispatch, and he's responsible for all of our after-hour patrols. He does manage a few of our after-hour accounts that strictly only service overnight. Now, that makes sense because most of his people he manages overnight. Now, he may have more reach with managing customers because he does patrols than he does the standing guard. But if our managers want to make more money, it all depends on how much they're able to manage, and it's based on hours. I could determine based on how many hours and how much revenue they do a week and what our gross percentages are. So it's much easier for us to determine how much we invest into managing properties and things like that.
But you've come up with a really good model, pricing model, which is a big factor in this, because if you're out there giving your service away, how do you give bonuses to your people?
I think this is the problem in the security industry. You get... And this kind of ties back to what we learned with Brad. You get owners of a security company that are former military or law enforcement. They don't quite understand the business side of it. And I think for a lot of companies, their response to that is they overcharge customers. A lot of owners, they go out, they hire a young guy to go do sales or try and drive a new business. But then those young guys don't understand the math behind the business. And they end up taking a job that they can't afford to provide service for. And so that job just continues to be in the red. Customers pay late, so it makes those problems become even more worse. And, you know, what I try to do is, and I know there are people that feel that maybe I overshare on how, you know, the math behind this, but I feel that the people that we're entrusting to be in those positions, they need to know the math. And they need to know what your direct labor percentages are. They need to understand what your gross margins percentages are. They need to understand how overtime, double time affects your business. They need to understand how meal break penalties can affect your business. And I think that's what we do really well, is we share and we teach our team the industry. And quite frankly, if they go and leave, whatever. That's not my concern. Okay. And so I really try not to focus on our competition as I try to focus on the quality services we're giving to our customers. And if we're empowering our people to really take complete ownership, why would they ever leave? And I think at the end of the day, our account managers are in a position where they have an opportunity to learn the business. They have a lot of flexibility on how they want to manage and how to develop relationships with their people. So I think for me, it's empowering them through giving them that increased responsibility, empowers the rest of the team, empowers the business. Because I want them to thrive in their role. We need them to thrive in their role. But am I concerned about them leaving? No. And if they do, we wish them the best of luck. But I think most importantly, if they feel like ownership, like owners in their role, then what that means is I know my customers are being taken care of. And at the end of the day, it's making sure that our employees and our clients are being well taken care of. And if we have someone that's in that role that understands what we're trying to accomplish and they understand what our expectations are, then the probability of them delivering that is very positive. And so to me, I think a lot of owners, because they're not willing to share, I think it does hold them back a little bit. For us, we're empowering our employees. We're sharing the math behind the business. We're communicating what can happen when you don't know, when you make mistakes by not knowing. And at the end of the day, everybody wants to do well. And so you have to give them the information in order for them to do well.
Yeah, I love that document you showed me that one time, your Excel sheet that you couldn't be having on Excel. It's seeing your head, but that was a great, I've never seen anything like that. Yeah. That's incredible. Breaks all those costs down and it's right there in front of you. It's amazing.
Yeah, I know exactly. So you ask some business owners, hey, what is your operating budget? They can't even tell you.
Nope, not it at all.
As an owner, you need to know how many hours you're providing each week. You need to know what your direct labor rates are. And so that spreadsheet was really, when I created that spreadsheet, it was more for insurance. Insurance wants to know how many hours you're servicing, where they're located, what vertical they're in. And so I have to, when I fill out those applications, I have to be able to explain what percentage of each vertical that I'm servicing. And I don't want to pay for coverage for verticals that I'm not servicing. And so creating that document, new ideas came up, and now I was able to figure out, hey, what are my true guard costs? And my guard costs are obviously your payroll, your payroll taxes, right? And then your cost for general liability and workers' comp, then any other benefits. And so every business owner should know what their hourly employees cost them. And then they can ensure that they're providing a fair and reasonable rate to their customer, and they can explain it. And managing the number of hours and knowing your gross margins, we're able to create a budget, but I'm also able to determine how much in revenue each manager is managing. So most of our managers manage anywhere from 1.7 to 2.5 million. And I can tell you how many hours they're managing. I can tell you how much money they bring in revenue. I can tell you what their operating budget is. I know what we should be profiting from that company, from that position. And if they want to come back to me for a raise, I can show them the math on how they can get their raise. Everything else after that, we're supporting them through supervision, shared dispatch resources, sales, that kind of thing. But they know that as the business grows, their role will grow and their pay will grow.
So how do they go find that out? They're scared. How do they find that out?
Yeah.
There's resources, but how do they find that out?
I remember when I first started, I didn't know anything about the security industry. I went out, I paid probably $1,500, $2,000 in growth market research for private security. They gave me information on G4S, Securitas, and then a local provider. And so I was able to learn a little bit more about the math. But then because I'm the guy that's paying all the bills, I learned more about the math. And so if I want, and at the end of the day, I tell people a successful business will create opportunities for people. Okay. If we continue to bleed the business and the business isn't thriving, then it's going to take opportunities away. And so we need the business first and foremost to be thriving. Because if the business is thriving and our customers are happy and we're getting new work related opportunities, then we're going to be able to pass those opportunities off to guards, et cetera.
All right. Charmaine, I want your thought on this too. I'm a guard company. And I've just been doing it wrong for a long time. I've got a lot of accounts. I'm chasing the mailbox, looking for the check all the time, barely making payroll. Been through my first or second marriage. How do I get myself clean? Yeah, well, really. Yeah. How do I get myself? Because listen, there's a lot out there. There's a lot of operators that are just paycheck to paycheck. They're working the car. They're 350 pounds, right? Because that's their meal. While they're out on patrol, they're trying to hold it down, meet payroll, just collect a paycheck and make it by, right? And take it every car that's gone over the 200,000 limit from the police department that's selling it right at the auction to drive it around. Real quick, what do you reckon? Take a bite, start over slow, reopen. I've got my opinion, but I'd love to hear from you, Matt. How would you, if you went into a business that was bleeding, what's your hourly rate? Oh, that's over here. I needed to drop it $2 or whatever, or I'm going with this. It's a mess. What would you do if I brought you in that business? How would you, outside of having to dissect it, go in? What would be your thoughts?
So
for the people out there.
It's interesting, yeah, because that's probably a real problem. This is a real problem. There's a lot of GARDA operators that operate, and they're struggling, and they're probably overspending, and their response is maybe more people will help resolve my problems. If it were me, if I found myself in this position, I would just do a hard reset. That means that I'm probably looking at those accounts that are profitable and not profitable. I'm probably getting rid of those accounts that are not profitable, or I'm going back to the customers and reworking new deals. But I'm changing the entire structure of our business. And what I would do is you got to be able to afford all of the supporting services. And so looking back and looking at those accounts and those relationships that you have, and then minimizing your expenses and then reducing unnecessary labor, I think that's where you start. But it starts with having gut hands-on. Like, you have to be hands-on.
Also investing in a bidding service, like the supporting agents that you're talking about. Investing in a bidding service that can get them back on track. Footwork, going out, soliciting clients the old school way.
Yeah, showing your face. And That's what I want to do with this. It's happened. Look, this is, Matt, I can't even thank you for even coming to this. I've always, like I said, this is valuable information for those. And for those watching, please subscribe. I'll tell you right now, subscribe, click on there, because we're going to have some good resources for you to help you if you ever want to take that. If you have some questions, that's what we're about. You got a lot of the industry experience here. We've been through it, and you can't be embarrassed because everybody's house is dirty. We all got skeletons. I've been through 4 or 5 businesses in my lifetime, security businesses. I had to shut my first one down because I couldn't meet payroll. I was growing business left and right. They just wasn't getting paid. It's all a learning experience. But what you shared today is right on the point. And there's so many that are doing it that way. They get excited. They mean, but man, I just feel bad.
Yeah, I think if it means rebranding, then it means rebranding. But at the end of the day, I think you have to simplify what you do in business.
Matt, help me tell them, if you're not making money with the client, okay, it's okay to let it go. It's a feel good. It's a contract with them. They see that number of contracts on there and they say, I've got 100 contracts, but 25 of them they're not making any money. They're losing money. Whether it's a guard, they had to pay several hours of overtime. They turned and burned. They don't get it. They got to hear it.
Yeah, they've got to identify those areas that they're leaking. And like I tell people, and I've had this conversation in our office, is you have to understand how much it takes to invest in managing an account. If you're overspending in what it is and what it takes to manage that account, then you need to adjust your bill rate. But ultimately, I think if I had a reset, a branding change is also good. Changing your branding identity could be a good fresh start.
Yep.
But finding those accounts that have been there, resetting expectations and simplifying, and sometimes giving move-on letters, sometimes that's what you have to do. Very challenging, because it's hard to get accounts, and we're talking about letting go accounts. But at the end of the day, I think the market's got to shift. The market's got to shift. So if you have an account that's not paying you enough, or whatever the case may be, if they can't afford the service, they can't afford the service. But if you are going back and you're asking for a rate increase, you have to make sure that you're delivering on your part. Very hard to go and ask for a rate increase when you're providing subpar services.
Yeah, and I think the other thing they forget to do too is once you get to that point where you are providing a decent service, it should be in your contract automatically. A lot of these guys are afraid to put an increase, that percentage each year, in the contract. So it's not a hard question for them when that time comes.
It can be scary, but if you're providing a great service, there's inflation, everything in the world is going up. So you have to know that your security services is going to go up
right
after a while. You can't stay at the same rate for years and years and don't expect an increase.
I think that's where most companies, they fall into that trap, right? They give a competitive bid because they're trying to win the contract, okay? And then a year passes by, they're not servicing the contract well. They don't want to lose the account, so they don't increase the rate. They're afraid that if they do increase the rate, they're going to go out to bid, so they just don't. So maybe they're not losing money in year one. Maybe they're still making money in year two. But it's year three and four that if they aren't adjusting to the market, that there is when they tend to stop making money. Yeah. And I think most customers, they're business owners or they're wealth managers or managing assets. And I think they're communicating with vendors who are also raising costs. I think they get it. Most business owners get it. And I think if you're setting the right expectations early on, if it is an annual increase, like we do an annual increase 4%. It's about reasonable. It takes the awkwardness away from me having to go and ask them or beg them for a rate increase, because most people aren't going to be willing to pay for more. But those rate increases, they're good. They provide transparency to the relationship. It ensures that we're able to keep up with inflation. They're trying to keep up with inflation. And so I think it's good to set that expectation early.
Yep. Great point. Listen, thank you both for coming today, spending time with me. Again, those that are listening, if you have any comments, anything you want to leave, please do. Matt, I want you as a regular here. You know that. We've been talking for a long time, so hoping to get you back on a regular basis here and share.
Yeah, it will be fun for me to share my experience and to hear the experience of others. And ultimately, this is a tough industry. It's very challenging. There are times where things are really good. There are times where things are really bad. But I think most owners are afraid to open up, share the challenges, and everybody's going through the same thing.
There's a lot of guards that want to start their own security company, and just because they're a great guard, and so they think that they can be a great owner. But it's a lot more work than they think, and it's not that easy getting clients.
Yeah. 100%. Charmaine, I want to thank you for coming. Thank you very much. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
And Matt, same thing, buddy. Thank you again for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Hey, everyone. No matter where you're watching from, if you get anything out of this, please subscribe. And most importantly, share this everywhere you possibly can. And if you're feeling extra generous, please leave us a comment. Thank you for watching.